I am here with Joe and Gus, who are two-thirds of Alt-J. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey. So today is a very special day because your third album, Relaxer, is out. It's an amazing album.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Congratulations. So we're just going to kind of talk through the album today. And I think I'm just going to go right with the first song, which is Three Worn Words. It is just such a beautiful, very heartfelt and quite tragic song. And I feel like the theme that I'm kind of getting from this is kind of like sort of damaged, a bit broken love. And this is a bit of a recurring theme for you guys. So what is it that draws you to this theme when you write?
I mean, I think that, you know, like you say, you're correct in asserting that it's a song about kind of like damaged or broken love. I mean, mm-hmm. I think it's something that actually people have been writing songs and poems about for hundreds or thousands of years. Not hundreds of thousands, that would be taking it a little bit far. But, you know, it's more just that we like to find new interesting ways of talking about the old kind of tropes of songwriting, really. Mm-hmm. We're not really breaking new ground in terms of the bare bones of the subject matter. It's more just the way that we phrase it that's interesting, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Although you guys do kind of treat some very interesting situations, like back with Every Other Freckle and Breeze Blocks, for example, you kind of touch on something very obsessive and very kind of disturbed love. And then this one just seems, I don't know, it's like a one-sided kind of love situation, maybe, on Three Worn Words.
Essentially, Three Worn Words is about a young man's, he steps out into the world and he goes on a journey and he meets these girls, and these girls kind of, they both have their way with each other. Mm-hmm. And I think he reads more into the situation the next day than they do. So they kind of just say, you know, love is just a button we pressed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of that song. The song's, yeah, about the overuse of the word I love you, and how if you use it too much, it loses its meaning.
Okay. Very nice. And now we move on to the second song of the album, which is also the second single after Three Worn Words, and that's In Cold Blood. Now, you guys started writing this song back when you were in university, so why did you choose to bring it back now?
Well, it's a song that we've always wanted to bring back. I think we always knew it was never, you know, I think when you kind of like anything you do, whether it's writing or writing music or, you know, drawing or anything, you think you never really throw things away. You just kind of put them all aside, and you may come back to them or you may not come back to them. I think in this case we'd tried to work on In Cold Blood before, never been successful, but always kind of just put it back into our sort of like attic of half-written songs, if you like. And so I think this time, when we were working on the third album, you always have a, you know, get the stepladder out, you know, get a torch and have a look in the attic, see what's up there. And we saw, you know, In Cold Blood in the corner with a sheet over it, and thought, maybe we can try that song again. And it actually, for some reason, this time it just clicked, it worked. And maybe we were just in a bad mood when we were doing it before, but this time it just, something was right about it.
Yeah.
And so it was clearly a good decision to go up there.
Mm.
All right, so moving on to the third song on the album, which is actually a cover, House of the Rising Sun.
Yeah.
So this is the second time that you guys have featured a cover on one of your albums.
Mm.
You had Lovely Day. Thank you, Bill Withers.
Mm.
Yes, which is really nice. This is the first time that you feature a song kind of a little more overtly. That time it was a hidden track.
Mm.
So what does this particular song mean to you? Why was this the song that you chose to bring in?
Well, House of the Rising Sun, it's a folk song.
Mm-hmm.
Its origin is unknown. Some say it was actually originally created in England. Others say it was in America. Some say it was in France. But the nature of a folk song, it's always passed down to the next generation. It's passed down from father to son, mother to daughter, mother to son, father to daughter,
father to nephew,
uncle.
So I think we see it as less of a cover and more as a version, in a way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know, so the first verse in our version is taken from Woody Guthrie, isn't it?
Yeah.
And the second verse, what's the second verse? It's original.
Second verse is all ours, Gus.
Mm.
All
mm.
ours.
Mm.
We see it as a reimagining the title and the beginning of the song is the springboard to our own song.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a small percentage of it is a cover. The rest is,
yeah, it's mostly an original song, really, isn't
ours.
It?
Absolutely. Okay. And I love the way that you guys almost worked it in a way that almost sounds like an actual sun rising. It's just such a beautiful, warm, comforting feeling that you just feel surrounded by when you listen to it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. That's very nice to hear. Thank you.
moving on once again. Now, we are getting into a bit of an interesting part in the album because I feel like there's a lot of really cool pivots in the styles of each song at this point. And this one is Hit Me With That Snare. It's the first one. Hit Me Like That Snare. My apologies. And when I first listened to this song, I kind of got a bit of an Iggy Pop and the Stooges kind of vibe. Would that be fair to say?
Certainly would.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not often, I think, that, you know, as a band, mm-hmm. we listen to other bands and deliberately kind of try and channel their sound. But I think in this case, we'd written this song very quickly, basically in the form of a jam. And then when it was done, our producer kind of went, okay, well, this is sounding fairly kind of like punk, post-punk sort of thing. Do you want to go down that road? And I think we thought, you know, it's our third album. We've clearly established ourselves as an original and quite a unique band. I think there's no harm in sometimes trying to do something in a certain style. So we pretty much listened to a bit of Iggy and the Stooges together. Mm-hmm. We listened to a bit of Velvet Underground and went, why don't we try and aim for something like this and see what happens. And this is the result, really.
Okay. And Iggy actually plays a little bit of a role in this album because he narrated the video for In Cold Blood.
He did.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, he did. That is less of an interesting story because it was really just someone we knew who knew someone who knew him. And it was luck that he was free to narrate those moments on the In Cold Blood video, but having done that, he's found a greater depth to the video.
I think by adding Iggy's voiceover, it really added an extra dimension to the video, mm-hmm. made it really, really cool, gave it this kind of like anti nature documentary kind of thing, you know. So sort of like not only through the fact that the video is quite sort of bloody and gory, but you have this kind of, rather than sort of the nation's grandfather David Attenborough, you have, you know, the nation's kind of like naughty sort of uncle who kind of leads you astray.
Iggy Pop. Uncle.
Absolutely. Yeah, it definitely added a little bit of that creepy factor. Like I was very scared for that mouse when I started watching it. So fluffy.
Yeah. That mouse they had to train. It's not a CGI mouse it's a mouse that has a trainer, personal trainer.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
All right, moving on again. Now, I think this particular pivot as we move into the next song was the one that I found kind of the most sharp, because we went from this really awesome like grungy garage rock kind of song to really bass heavy kind of electronic hip-hop thing, which is Dead Crush. So did you guys kind of deliberately put these two next to each other?
I think we did. I think that we with this album in particular, we thought about it very much in terms of like a vinyl side one and side two. So I think that we thought ending side one with Hit Me Like That Snare was kind of like left people thinking, oh, where are they going to go from here? And I think we thought, you know, flipping the record over and having this kind of like big bass line and sort of electronic hip hop beat just kick in was kind of like, right, this is a new part of the album, you know. And we really like that transition, I think.
No, absolutely. I never actually thought about it that way. But admittedly, I don't listen much to vinyl just because I've never kind of had it around in my life. But yeah, wow.
There you go.
Okay, yeah. Learn new things every day, don't we?
Yeah. So yeah, Dead Crush is a song that we started to write right at the end of the sessions for our second album. I think we'd pretty much wrapped up. We knew we had all the songs we needed. And it was almost like it was the last day before we left the writing studio. And we just happened to be kind of like messing around. And this jam kind of like came about, just an instrumental thing with just some kind of choppy guitar, a bass line, which I was doing on the keyboard, and some strings, and Tom doing a beat. And then, Joe, you were just improvising some vocals over the top with no lyrics, just kind of making sounds with your voice, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Luckily, we made a quick recording on Joe's phone just so we wouldn't forget it. And then in the sort of intervening time when we were touring the second album, we were listening to this demo a lot and thinking, this is really, really great. And it was a nice one to know we had in our back pocket when we started the third album, kind of like, okay, when we start the third album, we're definitely going to work on that demo thing that we did.
Nice.
In terms of Dead Crush, it refers to this idea of discovering somebody, a person from history who you have a crush on even though they're dead. And kind of a fun little game we were playing with each other over text as a band.
Yeah.
Okay, so more harrowing love and death.
Always.
Good stuff.
Always.
You gotta. All right, now we're starting to get into the last few songs in the album, and at this point we kind of settle into this really beautiful, warm kind of folk environment, which starts off with Adeline, the next song. And a few weeks before I heard the album, I actually discovered a little song called The Old Triangle. Yes. I found the Chris Teeley and Marcus Mumford version on YouTube somewhere. And as I was listening to Adeline, I noticed that you sing a line from that song.
Me too.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, the kind of the story of the song is it's sort of like set in the sort of the colonial period of Australia. Mm. I think we imagine Adeline being perhaps the wife of somebody who's working in Tasmania in some kind of official capacity, and she is from Ireland, I think, and she's going for a swim and singing the old triangle, and as she's swimming and singing, she is, unbeknownst to her, being observed by a Tasmanian devil who falls in love with her as he watches her swimming singing. And so in a way, that old triangle is kind of a song within a song, if you like, of which there are a few on the album.
Okay, it's amazing. Right, again, getting to the second to last song on the album now. This is Last Year.
Yeah.
And as I was listening to it, I feel like I heard a bit of a familiar voice. Was that by any chance the same woman or women who was singing on Warm Foothills on the last album?
Correct.
Very good.
Very correct.
Go to the top of the class.
Yay.
That's Marika Hackman.
Okay.
Yeah, a friend of ours who's a wonderful singer-songwriter,
mm-hmm.
who Charlie Andrew also produces, who's our producer. And Last Year is again, it's about a young man's decline over the year,
mm-hmm.
from January to December after having a breakup in January.
Okay.
And he goes downhill. I remember having a conversation with you about I felt that maybe I was taking advantage of the writing this sad song because I hadn't been through a breakup like that for such a long time, that I was merely just kind of collecting ideas and just not speaking from experience but talking more objectively, and I felt like maybe I was abusing the right of the sad singer-songwriter. But then you said, what did you say?
I said, you don't need a doctor's note to write a sad song.
Yeah, which I was like, no, you're right. That's really well put. So
it's true. I mean, it is an interesting topic. You know, I mean, if you're somebody who is, you know, we currently are pretty happy in our lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, is it exploitative in some way to take a really, really raw emotion and a subject like depression and suicide and turn it into a song? But I think that, you know, we see all our songs as kind of dramatic monologues, and I think, you know, you as a writer, you have the right to a certain detachment from your material. You know, you don't have to be, you know, you can write a film or a book about any subject you want, or a song, and I think that the song deals with it very sensitively, and it's good.
Yeah, and I like that thought of dramatic monologues. If we had a little more time than we did, I would say that would be a really interesting conversation to have, because you guys have so many amazing stories in your music. All right, so we are now at the last song, which is Pleader. This really amazing, epic piece that makes me kind of feel like I'm flying over Narnia a little bit. That's a really nerdy thing to say, but it does.
Great.
It's just grand, and I love that about it. And you guys use really interesting orchestral elements, especially strings, both in this song and the rest of the album, but especially here. And as I've been listening to it, it almost feels like, I don't know about a shift, but it feels like almost, what's the way I'm trying to say this? Basically, does this point to a kind of future direction for you guys? Is this something that you're going to start exploring more now, these kind of warmer sounds?
I think that, you know, everything that we do at the time is what we're doing at that moment. That sounds like a kind of a weird answer, but I think that, I think listening to our music, it's not ever going to be the case of this is what we're going to be doing in the future. I think everything we do is something that we're interested at that moment in, isn't it?
Yeah. Okay. No, I would agree with that.
You know, I think that certainly you can listen to this album as a whole or a song like Pleader and see that we don't ever have the intention of stopping being a band who are curious and experimental. We love to experiment and see what happens with trying out a new form. For example, you know, this song is kind of a hymn, but I don't think that means that our next album is going to be, you know, 10 hymns.
Mm-hmm,
you know, maybe just 3 hymns.
Yeah.
But do you think you will come back to this in any way, potentially?
Well, I think about this song is that it's probably one of the first songs that can live, it has a bigger meaning than the rest of our songs, in the sense that the core of that song is a hymn, mm-hmm. and it can be taken out of the alt-J world and it could be used at church, or it could be used in school fetes, or it could be sung by an all-male choir, you know, in mm-hmm. Wales. You know, it has the potential of living beyond the our canon, mm-hmm. and that's what's also quite exciting about this song, that it has the potential of
growing
wings and taking flight.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Again, it made me feel like I said, flying over Narnia it could fit in a film score, for example, and just kind of have that beautiful, all enveloping feeling that you want in a moment like that. All right, well, that brings us to the end. Guys, thank you so much for sitting down with me to talk about it. I'll talk about the album. It's so incredible, and I'm so excited that people get to hear it now.
Well, thank you for having us. It's lovely to talk to you about it, and really glad you like it.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.